Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast. This week, Pastor Trey Kelly leads us in the series, F-Series.
F-Series, week three, we've been talking about forgiveness, why it's important, how we receive it, why we should give it. And if you were here last week, you know I ended with a challenge. I asked you to just begin considering the thought of forgiving that person in your life. Remember, I didn't ask you to forgive them. I think I clearly said, don't even try to do it yet. Just be open to the idea of it. Just be open to the idea of forgiving whoever it is or whoever they are, if there's multiples. Those things that just continue to eat away at you, the anger, the grudge, the bitterness. And see, here's how I presented it. What I asked you to do was to consider what your life would be like if that anger and bitterness was gone. Consider what your life would be like if you woke up every morning and they weren't the first thing you thought about. Ooh. Consider what your life would be like if you were able to trust people again because you let go of the anger and the fear and the protection that you think it is of that other person never hurting you again. Think about how your life would be different if you could be rid of those things that haunt you. And for some of you, man, you thought about it. And it was easy. You're like, you know what? He's right. I need to make a change. I need to let this go. And so you're back ready. You're like, yes. Others of you, you're not so sure. You may be on the fence. Or maybe you would say, you know, I thought about it and the pain's really deep and I can't really figure out what it would look like, but the idea of it is good. And what I hope you would say is the reason you came to that conclusion is because you learned last week or through the course of this week or you watched the podcast or whatever. No, you can't watch a podcast. You listen to a podcast. You can watch the video on the website. But what basically clicked for you is you said, I now know why I should forgive. And it's not about them. It's about me. I would hope that you would say that I now know that forgiving other people sets me free. I know that not forgiving, that by holding on to the pain, holding on to the evil, remember Paul calls it evil, the evil that happened to you, by holding on to that, you allow that evil to continue to have power over you and to continue to hurt you over and over again. The very thing you think you're holding on to for protection is hurting you. I hope you would say that. I hope you would say that you now know that forgiving someone isn't letting them off the hook for what they did. Forgiving someone isn't allowing them back into your life. Forgiving someone isn't saying, well, it wasn't that big deal. Forgiving someone is saying, I'm going to hand it over to God and let him deal with the person who hurt me. I've got living to do. And really what I would hope you would say is that I now know that unforgiveness only hurts me. And if you weren't here last week, I shared one of my favorite quotes about unforgiveness. I think about it almost daily to remind myself of the futility of holding on to anger. And it's this: unforgiveness is like drinking rat poison and waiting for the other person to die. It's pointless. It's useless. It's destructive. What I hope you would say is, the reason I'm going to forgive is because it's lethal not to. It's lethal. And if you weren't here last week, and you are here and you're hearing all this for the first time, let me be a little clearer. Forgiveness, this idea of forgiving others for the harm they do to you, is not some burdensome, unfair, unreasonable commandment from an unjust God who just wants to watch you squirm. Forgiveness is an amazing, loving, incredibly generous gift that God gives to us to set us free. Forgiveness sets us free from the penalty of the mistakes we've made, and it sets us free from the power of evil to hold on to us on this earth. Evil's going to happen to you, but it doesn't have to hold you. It doesn't have to destroy you. It doesn't have to own you. It doesn't have to dictate your life. We kind of focused last week on a fundamental truth about forgiveness, and we're going to pick back up right there and keep going for this week. And the fundamental truth is this, that forgiven people forgive people. Forgiven people forgive people. It just means if we've been forgiven by Jesus, if we've experienced that, then we, you know, we need to forgive others. And last week really focused on the why. That's what that whole intro was. I just did there. The why we should forgive. Why should we do it? What I really want to talk about today is how we do it. How we actually go about the process of forgiving people. Because I don't know about you, but there's a lot of things in my life I know I should do. I know why it's important, but I don't always do it. I know you should eat well and eat healthy, but I ate 2 bags of Doritos last night. The heart doctor's like, yes, eat those Doritos. I know that we're called as believers on this earth, you know, those of us who believe in God and follow him, we're called to obey all the laws. Okay, and that includes the speed limit. I know we are supposed to go the speed limit. And I'll just stop there. But I know you're supposed to go the speed limit. I know that I should never raise my voice to my wife or to my children. But she's right there, and so I have to admit that I sometimes do. See, we all have things in our lives. We all have things that we know we should do. We all have things that we know we would be better for us if we did, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to do them. Here's what I think. I think many of you were convinced last week or today that, yeah, this forgiveness thing's a good idea. I probably should do it, but what I want to do today is try to help you know how you can. I don't want to just give you lofty ideas and lofty talk. I want to try to give you a very practical process, a pathway to allow you to begin to experience and to find forgiveness in your life. And the good thing is we're not alone in this, knowing we should do something but not really knowing how to do something. The Bible is full of people who knew they should do stuff but didn't quite know how to do it. The 12 men that spent 3 years on earth with Jesus, we call them the disciples. These were 12 men that Jesus handpicked and said, I choose you. Come follow me. He spent 3 years with them, daily training them, teaching them, because he knew he was gone one day. And it was going to be up to them to share his message to the whole world. So Jesus Christ, the perfect Son of God, spent 3 years pouring into 12 men, and they still didn't get everything. They still sometimes misunderstood him, which gives me a lot of freedom as a pastor. I'm like, hey, yeah, people are going to misunderstand you. They misunderstand it. Jesus. And if there's one guy who misunderstood him a lot, it's this guy named Peter. If you're familiar with the Bible at all, Peter is the guy that you love to read about because he makes you feel smart. Because Peter's dumb. Honestly, Peter is one of the reasons I know for a fact the Bible's real. Because Peter ended up becoming a leader of the church. Peter had a hand in orchestrating some of that. We even have some of Peter's writings in the Bible. But if it was fake and I'm Peter and I'm like proofreading, I'm like, oh, no, take that out. No, you don't build a religion yourself and make yourself look as stupid as Peter looks, right? Peter's the guy who was all hardcore, like Thursday night, he's having dinner with Jesus. He's like, dude, man, I got your back. I will never let you down. I am with you. Hours later, he denied three times that he'd ever known the guy. If you don't know about Peter, read about it. Make you feel great. But I love Peter because Peter was a guy who would ask the questions no one else would ask. Jesus always talked about forgiveness, always talked about how to do it. Why to do it. He always gave these lofty talks. You should forgive. We should love. Jesus didn't talk a whole lot about the how. And so what we find here in Matthew 18, which if you have your Bibles, you can turn there, but if not, it's going to be up on the screen. In Matthew 18, we see Peter kind of coming to Jesus with a how question. Jesus has been talking about the why forgive, why do it. And Peter comes to him, he's like, that's good and all. That's great. I got a couple of questions. I got a couple of mechanic questions, like the mechanics of how does this work? How does this forgiveness thing work? How do we do it? And so Peter comes to Jesus. I don't think he's being a bad guy. I think he's just asking an honest question. Verse 21, he says this, then Peter came to him and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? Now see, this is a very innocent question, but I kind of have to give you some context as to why he's asking this. Seven is not a random number. It's not just a throw out of the air. See, the current standard in the Jewish world at that time, apparently there were baseball fans, was three times. Their rabbis taught, oh come on, that was kind of funny. Just because it's raining don't mean you have to be like, to be Eeyore about it. Come on. Three times, or it just wasn't that funny. I'd be that too. I'm going to blame it on you instead of my joke skills because first hour I laughed at it. Three times, okay? That's what they taught. The rabbis taught that you forgive somebody once, twice, but three times you're out. And I don't have to forgive you anymore. That was the standard. And so what Peter's asking is Peter's saying, all right, Jesus, okay, you're saying we need to love people. I get it, man. We need to love on people. We need to forgive people. I get it. So obviously three times isn't enough because that's what we've been taught. I could double it. That'd be six. Seven sounds better. 7 days in a week. Seven's kind of perfect. How about seven times? Is seven good enough? See, Peter's trying to figure out how it works, trying to figure out the mechanics of it. And I think this week, some, if not many of you, wrestle with the same things, wrestle with the mechanics of forgiveness. Like, you should do it, but you're like, Trey, I want to forgive him, but he keeps doing stupid things. Like, every time I try to forgive him for that, he does this. And I don't know what to do. Some of you say, look, I can't even be in the same room with the person. How can I forgive them? They just make me so mad, I want to punch them in the face. Wanting to punch them in the face is debatable. Punching them in the face is bad. Some of you want to say there has to be a limit. That's what Peter's asking. There's got to be a limit, right? There's got to be a limit to where they've done enough to where I don't have to forgive them anymore and I can just be mad at them. Right? There's got to be. Look at Jesus' answer in verse 22. Jesus says, no, not seven times, but 70 times seven. No, that's not a literal number. It doesn't mean after 490 times, then you're okay. See, what Jesus is saying is Peter, buddy, I love you, man, but you're missing it. You're not getting it. You're not getting the point here. There is no limit. There is no lid. You're forgiven. So you forgive. Now, quick, I've got to say this because somebody's going to think I'm saying something else. I am not talking about tolerating evil in your life. Please hear me say that. Okay, I said it last week and I'll say it again. Ladies in the room, if your husband, if your boyfriend, if anybody, if they're beating you, You get out, you call the cops, you have their butts thrown in jail, and then you can forgive them. And like I said last week, or call me, I'll get some of our guys who are barely saved, we'll go take care of it. Have you seen our ushers? I got an ex-NFL lineman here, man. We don't play. Anyway, but it's not about talking. No, that's not what this means, okay? This doesn't mean that. This doesn't mean forfeit justice. This doesn't mean don't press charges. Because we live in a country with laws that have been ordained by God. And that authority is okay. So you call the authorities on the dude who's beating you, and then you forgive him while he's in prison. Like, oh, good, I forgive you. You ain't ever getting my back in my life again. That's over. That's done. But I forgive you. I have peace when I think about you. It's not rolling over. That's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is not rolling over. Forgiveness is handing it over. But what Jesus is trying to say, I think this is so important, is he's trying to say, Peter, I didn't come to raise the standard of forgiveness. Because that's really what Peter was asking. What Peter's really getting at is, how many times does the person have to hurt me before I don't have to forgive them anymore? When I was in Texas, I don't know why I'm telling you this story, but I am. When I was in Texas, I had a couple of buddies who were just like obsessed with getting their, their concealed handgun license. Like they so wanted to have so I went with them because it sounded cool. I've never carried a handgun in my life, but I was like, sure, I'll go with you. And it was the most frightening experience of my life because it was Texas. And in Texas, all people want to know is, what has to happen until I can shoot you? I wish I were joking. It was taught by a police officer, and he would go through the things, and everybody would basically just present scenario, 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 then can I shoot them? There was this little old lady, man, she had to be over 80 years old, and she had been real quiet, and she raised her hand, and she even goes, she's like, well, if I'm in my car, and I'm at a stoplight, and somebody comes up, and they tap on my window, can I shoot him? And the lady's like, ma'am, no, no, no. See, that's what Peter's really asking, right? When we raise the standard, that's what we're really asking. We're just saying, how long do I have to tolerate it till I can shoot them? 3 times? 7 times? See, what Jesus says is, look, I didn't come to raise the standard. I came to change the system. Because if it's a standard, then it's on you to accomplish. If I change the system, it's up to me to accomplish. See, Jesus says, the reason I say I need you to forgive forever is because you have been forgiven forever. See, Jesus takes Peter's how question and he gives him a why answer. How do I forgive? Because you've been forgiven. How do I do this? Because I do it. Jesus answers the how with the why because the why dictates the how. There is no how without the why. See, the reason you ask how to forgive, the reason Peter asked about the standard is because you think it's up to you to do it. You think you can forgive on your own. You think you can just magically produce the feelings in your heart and love them. You can't do that. Evil happened to you. You can't do that on your own. Forgiveness is a miracle that happens inside of you. And miracles only come when we ask God for them and then do what he says. I can't give you a process to produce a miracle. But a miracle is what you need. You need to say, God, you want me to forgive that person? I need to forgive that person. You change my heart. And I'll do what you say. Now, I know it's still muddy, and it's supposed to be. Jesus ain't done yet. Because what Jesus does, what he always does, is he tells a story. to help illustrate his point, to help illustrate how the why dictates the how. Peter's still asking a how question. How do we do this? This is how Jesus responds. Next verse, 23. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king who decided to bring his accounts up to date with servants who had borrowed money from him. Don't borrow money from the king. 24. In the process, one of his debtors was brought in who owed him millions of dollars. What it actually says there is 10,000 talents. And I don't think millions is actually quite appropriate for the translation. It should say billions and billions, or like squillions or something. Because what it's supposed to happen, what's supposed to happen when people heard that was they were supposed to think, good night, that's more money than anyone could ever possibly pay back in the history of the world. That's what's happening. This guy owed this king more money than he could ever possibly pay. And I'll go ahead and tell you what it's meant to illustrate. It's us, and it's our sin, and it's the sin debt we owe God for all the sins we've ever committed and will ever commit in our life. A debt so great, we never could repay it, ever. Verse 25, he couldn't pay, what'd I tell you? So his master ordered that he be sold, along with his wife, his children, and everything he owned to pay the debt. But the man fell down before his master and begged him, please be patient with me, and I will pay it. And then his master was filled with pity for him, and he released him, and he forgave his debt. He said, you're good, go, you owe me nothing anymore. Again, that's us. Every single person in this room has had their debt paid by the God of the universe. When Jesus Christ died on that cross, he paid the penalty for every mistake you have ever made or ever will make. Every person in the room. Now, some of you in the room have accepted that gift, and you're living in that forgiveness. For the rest of you, it doesn't change the fact that forgiveness is available. It's like you live in a building and the packet has been delivered to the front desk. It's there. You just got to go pick it up. You still got to open it. But it was done. It was paid. Now, I don't know about you, but if I owed somebody $1 billion, and they had the power to throw me and my wife and kids in jail, and they felt bad for me, they just said, you're good, never mind. It's done. Dude, I'd be doing backflips. I'd be running around telling everybody I knew how awesome that king was, how great he was. I'd be loving on people, you know, like Christians do. Now, verse 28. But when the man left the king, he went to a fellow servant who owed him a few thousand dollars. A few thousand dollars. Might take some time, but easily repayable. He grabbed him by the throat and demanded instant payment. Again, meant to illustrate us. Oh, we love to talk about God's forgiveness. And we love to receive God's forgiveness. And we love to talk about grace. And we love to feel the grace. We don't often give the grace. Now, I know that's a little shocking to you. You have never, I'm sure, seen a pastor go on television who himself has fallen morally multiple times to go on television and talk about why somebody else's sin is worse, right? We ain't never seen that. So hypothetically, this is what happens, I guess. But not even the preacher scale. It's what we do on a daily basis. Those of us in the room who have given our lives to Christ and who have experienced what he offers. We have received it, but we hesitate to give it. Verse 29. His fellow servant fell down before him and begged for a little more time. We've seen that before. This guy is seeing the person do exactly what he did. And he was just forgiven a $1 billion debt. Be patient with me and I will pay it, he pleaded. But his creditor wouldn't wait. He had the man arrested and put in prison until the debt could be paid in full. This is us. We experience forgiveness and choose not to extend it. Now, there are some in the room who are going to be offended by that statement. Because you don't think what happened to you was minor. What happened to you isn't a little thing. Trey, what happened to me changed my life. What happened to me, I had to go to counseling for years to get over. What happened to me was not $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 debt. It was the billion. It was huge. And in no way am I belittling what happened to you, but I'm just asking you to consider. God still forgave more. He forgave you for every single mistake you've ever made or will ever make in your entire life towards Him. That debt is still greater than whatever happened to you. It is. Verse 31. When some of the servants saw this, because the servants were paying attention, they saw this, they were very upset. So they went to the king and told him everything that had happened. And then the king called in the man he had forgiven, and he said, "You evil servant, I forgave you that tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you?" And then the angry king sent the man to prison to be tortured until he had paid his entire debt. And every time you and I allow the evil things that happen to us to take hold of us, to take root in us, to let the bitterness and the anger live there, to not forgive, guess what? We live this story because we're the ones who are in prison and we're the ones who are tortured. Because as I said last week, the people that hurt you, they ain't thinking about you. They're on the beach reading Twilight. They've moved on. We're the ones. Let me hold on to unforgiveness who suffer again and again and again. Now, I'm going to give this guy a little credit. I'm not certain he really understood what had happened. I'm not sure he really understood that his debt had actually been paid. Maybe he thought he said forgive, but really it meant like a payment plan. And so that's why he went after the guy, and because he needed to get the money to pay the guy back. That's all I can come up with. Because other than that, I can't understand how he would do this. It makes no sense to me at all. And you're the same way. When you look at it from the outside, you're like, how on earth could this guy who'd been forgiven billions of dollars not forgive the guy who owed him a couple grand? It doesn't make any sense at all. But then, as we've been talking about the whole time, as we dig down and apply it to our own lives and think about it, we realize, no, I do get it because I do it every day. I've been forgiven, but I'm not forgiving. And see, what Jesus is trying to say is we've been forgiven greatly, so we must forgive greatly as well. Jesus would say, it is impossible to forgive others without first being forgiven. If you weren't here week one, the entire week was about what Jesus did for us to make our sins go away. You should go watch it. It's impossible to forgive others without first being forgiven. Conversely, it is impossible to be forgiven and not forgive. It's impossible. And here we have another whoa, whoa, whoa moment. Because some of you want to say, no, 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 impossible is a strong word, Trey. Impossible is a strong word. Don't you say it's impossible for me to have a relationship with Jesus and not forgive others. Okay, I didn't say it was impossible. Jesus did. Verse 35. That's what my heavenly Father will do to you if you refuse to forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart. Now again, I feel like I've had a lot of disclaimers today. In no way is Jesus saying you'll lose your salvation if you don't forgive people. That goes against everything in God's word. It's not what he's saying. Here's what he's saying. In my best southern grammar, He's saying, if you don't give it, you don't got it. Because if you've got it, you'll give it. Bad grammar, great theology. If you've got it, you'll give it. It's as simple as that. Now, what I want to try to do as we end the message is I still want to help you. I still want to give you some practical things. I still want to give you kind of a roadmap, a pathway. And one of the first things I want to do is go back to the first sentence Jesus said to help you do that. Jesus said, Peter said, how many times? 7 times. Jesus said, no, 70 times 7. And when we hear that, what we think is Jesus is saying, forgive a bunch of people. Or if you have people in your life who hurt you a lot, then you just continue to forgive them. If you're in a relationship, they are going to hurt you, and you're going to have to forgive them, probably on a daily basis. So a lot of us think, well, that means I need to keep forgiving before tonight, you know, it just, yeah, whatever. But what if in addition to that, what Jesus is trying to say is this, in addition to freely forgiving when people hurt you and new things happen to you, what if he's also saying there are some things that are going to be so painful? There are some things that are going to be so tragic. There are so things that are going to have so many scars on you. You are going to have to forgive that same offense 70 times. Or 70 times 7 times. See, so many people give up on forgiveness because they decide they're going to do it. They say, okay, I forgive you. And then the next morning, they're mad again. And they're like, well, I guess it didn't take. Or I guess I'm terrible. Or I don't love Jesus enough. No. Some things you're just going to have to forgive over and over and over again. Forgiveness is not a feeling. Forgiveness is an act of will. You decide you want to forgive. And then you ask God to change your heart. But the reason I know forgiveness is an act of will is because the steps God took to forgive us were an act of will. Do you really think God was upstairs high-fiving the angels? I can't wait. I'm about to watch my kid get beat for 6 hours. Oh. And then I'm going to go watch him get nailed to a tree. And he's going to cry. He's going to cry out for me. And I'm going to have to turn my back on him. You think God was stoked about that? No. It was an act of will. If you don't believe me, go read the Gospels. Jesus himself was very concerned about the situation. In the garden, he prayed. He begged his father to take the cup away from him. He was so stressed out. His anxiety level was so high that blood vessels in his forehead burst. And it looked like he was sweating blood. That's how anxious he was about what he had to do. But God did it. Jesus did it. As an act of will. Do you know why? Because you were worth it. You were worth the pain. You were worth the fear. You were worth the anxiety. He knew what the other side would look like, so he had an act of will. He said, I'm going to do this, even though I don't feel like it. And now I ask you to do the same thing, to choose to forgive, to choose to let it go, to choose to be freed. You're not letting them off the hook. You're not forfeiting justice. You're setting yourself free. And in that process, you have to realize it's a process. You might have to forgive it every day for a year. You might have to forgive it every day for 5 years. But as you're doing it, God and Jesus are walking with you. They're doing a work inside you. They're transforming you. They're cleaning you. They're giving you a new heart. so that it gets easier, so that one day you're going to wake up and not think about that person anymore. One day when their name comes up, your heart isn't going to stop beating. Adrenaline is not going to shoot through your body because you're so scared. And I know there are some of you that still want to say, not me, man. I hear you, but not me. No, I'm on board. I'll try to forgive. I'll try to let it go. But I'm never going to forget this. My heart can't change on this. It's too real. It's too raw. It's too bad what happened to me. I don't believe it. I don't believe God can change my heart. And to you, I want to share one more story. It's a story about a lady named Corrie Ten Boom. Corrie Ten Boom was a Christian. She and her family lived in Holland during World War II. And during the Holocaust, she hid Jews from the German soldiers. Well, they found out, and they actually arrested her family. And Corrie and her sister were sent to a concentration camp. She survived. Her sister did not. And after the war, Corrie, being a Christian, went around and told stories and basically was an evangelist and preached and thought about Jesus and his forgiveness. She wrote a book called The Hiding Place that kind of details her account. And I think there's been movies made about it, whatever. But in The Hiding Place, she shares a story that I want to share with you as we close. She says this. It was in a church in Munich where I was speaking in 1947 that I saw him. A balding, heavy-set man in a gray overcoat, a brown felt hat clutched between his hands. One moment I saw the overcoat and the brown hat, the next, a blue uniform and a visored cap with its skull and crossbones. See, memories of the concentration camp came back with a rush. The huge room with its harsh overhead lights, the pathetic pile of dresses and shoes in the center of the floor, the shame of walking naked past this man. I could see my sister's frail form ahead of me, ribs sharp beneath the parchment of skin. See, Betsy and I had been arrested for concealing Jews in our home during the Nazi occupation of Holland. This man had been a guard at Ravensbrück concentration camp, where we were sent. And now he was in front of me, hand thrust out, a fine message. How good it is to know that, as you say, all our sins are at the bottom of the sea. See, it was the first time since my release that I'd been face to face with one of my captors, and my blood seemed to freeze. But he continued, "You mentioned Ravensbrück in your talk," he was saying. "I was a guard there. But since that time, I have become a Christian. And I know that God has forgiven me for the cruel things I did there, but I would like to hear it from your lips as well. Please, Fraulein, please. Will you forgive me?" And she writes, "I stood there and could not. Betsy, my sister, had died in that place. Could he really erase her slow, terrible death simply by asking?" It couldn't have been many seconds that he stood there, hand held out, but to me it seemed hours as I wrestled with the most difficult thing I ever had to do. For I had to do it. I knew that. Because of the message of God, the message that God forgives has a prior condition, that we forgive those who have injured us. If you do not forgive men their trespasses, Jesus says, neither will your Father in heaven forgive your trespass. If you got it, you'll give it. Still, I stood there with the coldness clutching my heart. But I remembered, forgiveness is an act of will. And the will can function regardless of the temperature of the heart. Jesus, help me, I prayed silently. I can lift my hand. I can do that much. You supply the feeling. And so woodenly, mechanically, I thrust my hand into the one stretched out to me, into the man who would murder her sister. As I thrust my hand into the one stretched out, an incredible thing took place. The current started in my shoulder, raced down my arm, sprang into our joined hands, and then this healing warmth seemed to flood my whole being, bringing tears to my eyes. Healing. I forgive you, brother, I cried, with all my heart. And for a long moment, we grasped each other's hands, the former guard and former prisoner. I had never known God's love so intensely as I did then. Now look, I'm not asking you to change your heart today. Only God can do that. What I'm asking you to do is stretch out your hand. What I'm asking you to do is to take a step. Take the only step you can take today. Take an act of will.
Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast. For more information, sermon downloads, and more, go to wellspringchurch.tv.